cliffcentral.com.
Yes. Cliffcentral.com on a Friday morning where the smart people hang out. You get to know what's going on in the world. You get to laugh a little bit. And you get to not take yourself so seriously. That's the way you should live every day, but I mean, I'm not going to tell you what to do. You've already made good decisions. You're here with us. You know, it's those other people. Those are the ones who break suddenly on the highway, screw it up for everybody. Mavale and I were just saying a moment ago, by the way, that was Jason Derulo. We were saying that we think the earth is full, and you know, we were listening to that George Carlin clip yesterday, which I know you loved, and you probably watched it again.
Yes.
Anyway, George Carlin said the planet's not in trouble. It's humans that are in trouble, and he's right, because the planet will be here long after we're gone.
Yes.
But I said, Earth is full. You know, it's one of those comments that I make every now and then that isn't particularly well-researched, but I like to say these things because it gets people fired up.
Well, you definitely feel it when you're not moving on a road because there are too right. many cars on there.
Right. Well, Oma said to me, that's nonsense. What is it you said?
Well, it's very simple. If you take the global population...
Yeah.
In the same density as New York City.
Okay, so in other words, if we all lived in high-rise buildings and we had the density of Manhattan.
Right, I think it's per person that you got like 10 square meters per every person, something like that. Anyway, okay. So if you take that Manhattan density and mm-hmm. you condense it to incorporate everyone in the world, we could all fit in the state of Texas.
Yeah, but that would be very uncomfortable.
No, true. But
that would be one hell of a city, and can you imagine traffic in that city?
But it's an analogy. It's about stating that the world is not full at all. And in fact, there will be population decline fairly soon, depending how wealthy people get over the next 20, 30 years.
Yeah, it's true that the more prosperous people get and the more successful people are in terms of material wealth and their own social position, the less children they have. So then what will happen is once we reach a stage where there aren't as many poor people in the world, which is actually the stage that we're going towards, because people who think that the world is worse now than ever before, it's usually old people who think that, because they grew up at a time and they preferred that time.
And millennials.
Millennials?
Millennials always think tomorrow is much worse than...
Really?
Oh, absolutely. If you look at how they view the world, it's everything's more oppressive and everything's worse off.
But, I mean, we're talking very generally now.
I've always thought that millennials are very super optimistic because, you know, in their minds...
That's my understanding.
They can be the next Kim Kardashian. They genuinely believe that they can be the next
impression that you two are talking down to millennials.
No, I'm just talking about the impression that I get from them.
Apparently, I am a millennial. Someone said that to me the other day.
Yeah, it's...
It's a bit confusing.
It's a bit confusing.
We looked at this the other day. Some people say that if you even make the late 70s, you're a millennial.
Yeah.
Other people say, no, you have to be in the 80s. And other people say that, no, you have to be born in the 90s to be a true millennial. So who knows? It's somewhere around there.
I would think it's a mindset more than an age bracket.
Yeah, I think it is. But, okay, so we get to 9 million and then we start to decrease in population.
Well, 9 billion is what they expect for us as peak population of the world. And then once that happens, a lot more people will be far wealthier than they are now, and population will naturally decline. And that's actually a problem. Because all the
it's not. Humans must die.
No, I accept that. But the way that the economic system is built up is that the young pay for the old in terms of pensions, in terms of social security. So if you have an aging population like Japan now, who's going to pay?
Who's going to be buying all those adult nappies? And all that that processed food that you don't have to chew? Yeah, that's what old people eat, isn't it? I don't know. I don't have any old people in my family. They all had the good grace to die before I had to deal with them. You know, that's the truth. I mean, I'm not trying to sound unkind, but all four of my grandparents were gone by the time I was 22. Three of them before I was 15. Now, as much as I loved my grandparents... I didn't want to deal with very old people, so they did me a favor.
Yeah, but you never would have actually dealt with them, though, Gareth, would you? You? Come on.
Yeah, I think I would have. I think they would have been around. I think they would have been there, you know, clogging up the corridors, complaining about the weather, moaning about, what are you doing on that computer? That kind of thing.
Oh, they're so hip.
Oh, yeah. Oh, definitely. So as a result, I find myself, I struggle to be empathetic with old people when they complain about stuff. And particularly when old people say things to you like, oh, it was better in my time. It really, this is the best time to be human. Every other time in human history was fraught with danger and violence and fascism and all kinds of horrible things. So we're actually very lucky to be alive now. Even if you think your life is bad, and trust me, I'm not saying that you don't have a struggle of your own going on, but no matter how bad it is, you can instantly communicate with anyone else in the world. Opportunities are everywhere. There is no reason that anyone should go hungry except because of bad distribution of resources.
Or anorexia.
Or anorexia. Fair point. But you know, it's a good time to be alive. And since it's Friday morning, I'm feeling particularly optimistic. By the way, speaking of Friday morning and today, we're off to the Lurys. Our creative director, Aria Kelman, is going down. Mubs, our app was nominated for a Lurie.
Hey now, look at us.
The Cliff Central app. So if you use that every day, thank you for being part of the reason that this app is a success. Very, very nice. A couple of messages coming through. Do you want to hear some of these?
Yeah.
All right. We've got Michelle. She said it was my birthday on Sunday. Happy birthday to me. And Kala says, Roman's analogy is horrible. Where will all the food come from for all those people living in high-rises in Texas?
The analogy is just to show that the world's not overpopulated.
It's
not
a space thing.
Goodness.
All right. People don't like you, Roman.
Excellent.
You actually take pleasure out of not being liked. All right, here's some stuff that I wanted us to get to, and then we can talk about some of the things that are going on in the news. And you can, of course, call in and tell us what's on your mind this Friday morning. We'd love to hear from you. It's not up to me to decide everything to do with the show. Here are the greatest hits of the world. Just listen. I'll explain after. That's not the greatest hit in the world.
No, definitely not.
That's the Godzilla music. All right, here they are. The greatest hits in the whole world ever. Okay? Do you know where that comes from?
No.
Guns N' Roses.
Guns N' Roses.
What's the song?
Okay.
Sweet Child of Mine.
That's right.
She's got a smile that sticks to me. Reminds me of childhood memories where everything was as fresh as a bright blue sky.
Right. Next. AC/DC Thunderstruck. We know how that goes. Next. Bon Jovi. Bam, bam. It's my life. Right. Home. It's my life. Yeah.
The silent pray for faith be body.
Sung by some karaoke dude. Okay, Smooth Criminal, Michael Jackson, right?
Mm-hmm.
Ice, Ice, Baby. Okay, so we either Ice, Ice, Baby or Under Pressure, David Bowie and Queen, depending on which you remember. And I mean, this is not, by the way, I'm starting to discover this is not by any means the greatest hits in the world.
What's
but it's one person performing all of these songs.
Oh, that's what it is.
Yeah. Where's that from?
Red Hot Chili Peppers?
Yeah, it sounds like that's it. What's the song?
Get started.
What's this?
It's ours going over.
Jeez, I don't know this. Help me if you know what this is. Let me be very clear. This is not the greatest hits in the world ever, all right? That is Nirvana. That was Smells Like Teen Spirit.
With the lights out, it looks dangerous.
Madonna. All right, next. All right, by no means the greatest hits in the world, but an interesting show of talent by one particular guitarist and two vocalists there. Just a nice thing to listen to. Now, let's move on to much more important things. Here is a Trump campaigner arguing with CNN. This kind of thing always makes me laugh because American television, all that American TV, whether you're on CNN or on Fox or on MSNBC or any of them, all that they're striving for, the thing they want the most, is a fight. If you can make a fight break out, hang on, I just think we've got a word in one of those songs. It was Metallica's Whiskey in the Jar that we were missing in the middle there. Thank you, Jared. All right, so here's the deal. When Americans can get two people from opposing political parties or points of view, even if there's no... The one is completely ridiculous and the other one is a very sensible point of view. If they can make them argue and they can make it sound like both arguments are valid, they've got a winning formula for viewers.
It's good for ratings.
Absolutely. So listen to this quickly.
You say it's not a shakeup.
I think this is Hala Gharani, right, from CNN, and she's busy talking about the Trump campaign with a Trump campaigner.
So you say it's not a shakeup, but you guys are down. And it makes sense
who?
That there would...
Says
polls,
who?
Most of them. All of them?
Uh-oh.
Says who?
Polls. I just told you. I answered your question.
Okay. Which polls?
All of them.
It's got to be the most awkward thing ever.
Oh, gosh.
Who says? Who says? Polls. All of them. Who says?
I just told you.
Oh, wow. I mean, that's a disaster, right? How do you even begin to figure that one out?
Was it the Trump campaign manager or someone?
Yeah, it's one of the campaign advisors.
Okay.
But what is going on? Romain, you pay attention to this stuff too. Come on, what's happening with this Trump campaign? It seems like it's crashing and burning in the most spectacular fashion.
Well, because Trump's an idiot. I like the guy. I want him to win just for troll purposes. But the man's an idiot. He first of all, he attacks the Gold Star family. So at the DNC, you had that Muslim guy coming up and saying his son died in the army.
Right.
And has Donald Trump done anything to sacrifice for the country or whatever the case? And Donald's like, yes, I made lots of money, made lots of jobs. Like, it's a sacrifice. He just said, but Hillary voted to go to the war. I didn't. Hillary killed your son, not me.
Wow.
But he attacks that father. He's like, oh, who wrote his speech? Who did this? Who did that? Like,
it's
frustrating.
He's a bit of a teenager. I mean, that's the kind of thing that you deal with when you're on the playground in high school.
Absolutely. And also when he said Hillary will have a new Supreme Court justice, she can nominate whoever she wants, and then the Second Amendment people will take care of her.
Which means that the people who have guns will shoot her dead.
Yes.
Not a good move. So people are starting to turn away from Trump. Even dumb people are starting to go, well, hang on.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's not looking good. The poll numbers really are looking pathetic. And suddenly he's brought in all these advisors, these very expensive guys who've given advice to people like the president of the Ukraine. Yevchenko was his name.
The previous one.
Yeah.
He was
ousted.
Yeah.
But this guy was a piece of work, and he's brought in a dude who used to work for him. Some creepy old dictatorial advisor who's been around since the Nixon administration that he's pulled out. You know, they're these people.
Yeah.
This is what's amazing about politics, is somewhere in, I don't know, Chainbridge Road in Maryland, or in upstate Virginia, or out in Delaware, where they've got those beautiful big houses that are on the sea, and you've got your own little jetty with your own little boat. They're these very, very rich, very influential people who've been advising governments for years about how you change the regime in Nicaragua, how you overthrow Gaddafi, how you go around the world demanding X, Y, and Z and threatening with death person A, B, or C.
These are the people who pull the strings.
These are the real power players. And one of those people is this dude. I wish I could find his name for you. But he is Trump's new advisor.
Well, he's also got a new campaign manager. So it seems like he's doing a complete overhaul of his team.
One thing Trump, what does he keep telling us he doesn't like to do?
Who
doesn't
lose.
He like? He doesn't like losers.
He doesn't like
and
lose.
Suddenly when he's a loser, he needs to fix that, right? In a hurry. So Trump is scrambling madly to try and find people to fix this problem.
And he also brought in Steve Bannon, who was the editor of Breitbart.
Oh, okay.
And this guy, Steve Bannon, made a documentary. And it's called Fire from the Heartland, The Awakening of the Conservative Woman.
Uh-oh.
And it's about Sarah Palin. He made a documentary about Sarah Palin and how great she was.
That sounds like a terrible person.
And
to
this
bring
is the
in.
Type of people he brings in to his campaign.
Well, I mean, these are his people. These are the kind of people that Donald Trump relates to.
He must bring in Ben Shapiro. At least Ben will be honest with him.
Yeah, but I don't think Ben Shapiro would want to work for Donald Trump.
No.
Okay, here's the interesting thing, though. They did a bit of a poll, a survey here in South Africa about voters, and they figured the following. Some of this is not going to be surprising to anybody. First of all, who do you think voted for the ANC in greater numbers? Women or men?
Please don't say women. Please don't say women.
Just guess. What do you think it is?
I think it's women.
What do you think, Mubs? Men or women? Who voted for the ANC in greater numbers, men or women?
Well, we know that there were more women voters registered to vote.
That's not... Imagine we equalize the total in terms of the number of potential voters and we just look at it across gender.
Okay, I'm going to go with women.
I'm afraid you're right. It is women.
Because women are more loyal, right? It's that whole loyalty thing.
It's got to do with loyalty. It's also got to do with kind of rural education levels. It's got to do with a lot of social grant propaganda. There's plenty around that that has made a lot of women stick with the ANC, despite the fact that we've got nothing short of the world's prime example of a misogynist at the top of the tree at the ANC.
So would this then be older women? I mean, okay.
Students. Who do you think the favorite party of students was? Anyone want to hazard a guess?
DA?
ANC?
Peshida, you want to guess?
I guess EFF.
Peshida and Romain are right in equal measure. Half the students like the DA, half the students like the EFF. So,
in other words,
all the students are happy with coalitions.
Now, that is very telling because, of course, the DA and the EFF are the only parties with young leaders.
That's correct.
So it makes
but
sense.
But it's more of a function of the fact that they are educated and idealistic in some way, or at least ideological, and would vote because of the way they feel more than necessarily and sometimes the way they think, but more the way that they feel politically at that age. And remember, you're probably at your most activist age when you're in your 20s. This is the next question then. Out of everybody in this country who protests, who actually takes to the streets, dances around, chants, sings, sometimes burns things, occasionally destroys stuff, which party do you think accounts for the majority of people in protests in South Africa?
No doubt the ANC.
Wrong. EFF.
Oh, really?
Yes, EFF.
Wow.
EFF members and EFF voters are far more likely to protest than any other political group.
Huh.
Despite what we had in Tswane before and everything else. That's what the research says. There was an interesting poll that was conducted during and post the elections, and these are the results.
But is that extrapolated for future protests or protests that have happened?
No, protests that have happened.
Really?
It has to have been protests that have happened. No.
Hmm.
You can't do a prediction. Otherwise, it's called a prediction.
Yes.
No, but and Nostradamus just has to be called in for that. No use in doing polling.
He's the only one who can actually tell the future. I mean, come on.
Right. Exactly. But I thought those were pretty interesting statistics and interesting figures, don't you?
Which voters were more self-righteous? Did they do polling on that?
That's anyone's guess. I don't know. Who do you think they would be? Go on, Roman, you started
DA
this.
DA members by far.
DA members DA the most voters. Self-righteous.
Oh, can you imagine?
Now, I forgot to ask you after the elections. I actually haven't spoken to you since the elections. Are you happy with what's happened? Does it mean anything to you? Do you care, you anarchist lunatic?
Well, as I was speaking to Mums a bit earlier,
I heard a little bit of that.
I think the DA is a bit more transparent with how much they steal from us, which is nice. I suppose.
A little more transparent about how much they steal.
Okay. Well, at least you can tell that, say they steal 50,000 rand a year in taxes, that, and you can see somehow things improving on the outside. That's helpful. I think it's a good thing. I think the political democracy is maturing in a way. But yeah, we just got less oppressive overlords. Like, nothing will really change other than there'll be less litter.
You don't think this shows that perhaps the whole race war that was manufactured in social media is not as big a deal? I had Shaka Sisulu in my office yesterday.
Oh, really?
And we were talking about this. And Shaka Sisulu was one of the people who was paid by the ANC. We were actually talking about him just yesterday morning. Do you remember?
That's right.
He was one of the people who's paid by the ANC to campaign. And I said to him, so you guys did really well. He told me, I don't know if this is true, and we're going to get him in here to admit it publicly, because I don't want to be the guy who's misquoting him or quoting him out of context, which always happens. But he said to me that before they started their campaigning, the numbers were even worse. In other words, the ANC would have done worse if their campaign hadn't come along. Of course, it sounds like a great way to cover your backside when your campaign doesn't work.
Sure.
Because who knows what those poll numbers were before. But if that's true, that doesn't make the ANC look any better.
But we also know that their numbers have been declining since the Mbeki reign or regime.
Absolutely.
So what are you trying to... Your numbers are still declining anyway. Yeah.
But don't they ever look at the ethics of politicking in this way?
No.
I think it's created a hell of a lot of tension, unnecessary tension.
Big time.
I don't know. I think
in the country.
I think the tension has always been there, hey? I mean, I hear you saying that there are people who are sent out there to instigate, but I think that what those people are bringing back to the surface are things that are underlying anyway. The tension is already there. They just bring it up to the surface. But it doesn't change the fact of how South Africans feel about each other across racial lines.
No, that's a good point. I just don't think it's necessarily as pronounced as when they stoke the fire. You know, the fire is burning. There's always there's the kind of embers of extreme racist white people and extreme racist black people. And they will always hate each other no matter what we do because they're just fearful of the other.
But I mean, here's the thing. It's your democratic right to be a racist. You are more than allowed to be a racist. It depends entirely what you do with it.
Well, you know, I've always...
If you harm someone, then it's an issue.
I've always said that there's a little bit of bigotry in each and every single one of us, you know. It especially comes out when you are amongst your own, if you start paying attention to how you speak about other people who are different to
That's
you.
That's where the difference comes.
It's in every single one of us. So.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have my own because there's not many French Arabs in this country. But
you identify with,
when
then
I speak with when yeah. I speak with white people, yes,
yeah.
Everyone has a bit of bigotry.
Yeah,
I think it's natural. But
yeah, sure. But I mean, it happens in each demographic.
And as we've discussed, race is the most obvious way to find a difference between you and someone else. But as you continue to look deep and dark and delve into the corners of human consciousness, what you find is that people will always try to separate themselves from others on a micro scale. So even inside families, they'll go, "Well, that's the brother I like, and that's the brother I don't." and even in you know, it gets tribal for some people. It gets to be about language for some people. It gets to be about IQ for other people. It gets to be about dress sense, sexuality. It gets to be about a bunch of different things. And if we're going to keep finding reasons to dislike each other, I think that that is an anti-progressive, anti-intellectual move.
Yeah, but I don't think that we are actually intelligent enough to not default to that, Gareth. I think we're always going...
There have been people in history who've taught us that it can be done. I mean...
I think for the masses, if we speak about the masses, I don't think that we're intelligent enough to want to strive to not group ourselves according to which box we want to fit into.
But that's why you need anarchism.
There you go.
Because
there are not enough of you out there, Ramon.
Then nationalism won't exist. Nationalities won't exist whatsoever. So people have one less thing to be proud of that they have no merit in being proud of.
Yeah. This brings us back to the patriotism discussion from earlier, and I'm still waiting for someone to argue with me about what good comes from patriotism. because I think it's like
national pride, Gareth. National that's pride. What comes from patriotism is pride.
Let's explain where this discussion started, because a lot of people don't agree, and if you do, great. I mean, then there are more of us who are starting to think differently about stuff. But patriotism used to be enforced. You belonged to a country. You literally belonged to that country. They would deploy you as a soldier wherever they wanted you if you were a man, and you were put to work as a woman. And your rights were almost like the crumbs or the biscuits from the table that they would give the dog for being a good dog. And this is the way humans have lived for thousands of years, whether it was under kings or emperors or priests or chiefs or pharaohs. This is how we've lived. And now in the 21st century, I don't know that we need to belong to a state, and that we need to have the state regulate how we're allowed to move around. They have the state regulate where we're allowed to go and who we're allowed to be with. This is the whole point with apartheid. The state was in control of actual interracial relations. They said blacks must go here, whites must go there. This is the problem when you give the state control of things. And they inevitably fuck it up because they're the state. And it's a collective of a bunch of parasitic people who can't do it for themselves in the real world. So they become what Roman calls overlords. Right? I mean, this is music to your ears.
Well, yes. I mean, you're speaking to the choir here. Well, I don't know about Mbali. I think she's a secret anarchist inside somewhere.
I'm starting to think so too.
But yes, it is true.
As long as she doesn't have to do what all the other anarchists do and actually go out there and cause trouble.
Yeah, I don't want to do it publicly.
Okay, hold on. There's a big difference. Those anarchists who cause trouble.
You cause trouble. That's all you do on Twitter.
On Twitter, please. But those anarchists who cause trouble, they go to the street, they petrol bomb shops, and they want more state. They're not anarchists. They're like lefty bastards. They're not real anarchists. Anarchists want no state whatsoever.
So what is the ideal world for Roman? You sit at home and nobody bothers you.
No.
Because that's my ideal.
I do like that.
Yeah.
But the ideal state of being is that everything I do is voluntarily is based on voluntariness. So every if I want to go visit there, I don't need some arbitrary paper for it to do, unless it's a private estate or entity or whatever the case might be.
Uh-huh.
But if I want to leave, say you got different communities in an anarchic society and they all have different economic models that they follow.
Has this ever been tried anywhere in the world?
No, there has been anarchic societies in Iceland, in a few places like that.
In Iceland?
But anarchism is very left-wing, in fact. So I'm extremely left-wing, but I respect property rights. That's the difference between myself and like a communist.
Okay.
So we're both anarchists, but I think property rights are the foundation of freedom, whereas he says it's the foundation of oppression.
Okay.
That's where we change.
All right. This is all getting very philosophical. Mm. The point I wanted to make was, I don't think that there's necessarily any good in patriotism anymore, except to make you feel like you're part of something at a sports event. That's really it. And if that's a reason for you to wear a flag or to sing an anthem or to salute something or to obey some kind of code of laws, then yeah, good for you. I'm very happy for you to do that. I think you've got to be a good law-abiding citizen of whatever geographical area you're born into. But if you don't like that geographical area, you should be able to move to another one.
Or if you're Donald Trump, it's not just about the sports team you support. It's also about being the best nation in the world. Which is why he's working so hard to work America great again.
And to ruin his own campaign at the same time by being an idiot. All right, what else is in the news, Mubs? Let's talk about some stuff that's going on.
All right, I've got a bit of an Oscar Pistorius update for you because,
I know,
everybody's sick and tired of hearing about Oscar Pistorius, but you know what? The case doesn't stop because you're sick and tired of it. It continues. And so the application by the state for leave to appeal against Oscar Pistorius' 6-year jail sentence is going to be heard next week Friday, right? It's all going to go down in the Gauteng High Court in Pretoria. But Oscar's legal team yesterday filed their opposition to prosecutor Gerry Nel's application. Nel claimed that Judge Masipa meted out a shockingly lenient sentence to Oscar following his conviction, which is why they're going back and saying,
shockingly
6 years
lenient.
Is simply not long enough. Let's try this again. Yeah. Oscar's lawyers contend that there is no prospect of another court increasing the sentence. It said that the state had no regard for the fact that Oscar had already spent 12 months in jail when he was previously convicted of culpable homicide. So come next week, Friday, it's going to be Oscar news all over again, just when you thought you were over this. Mm. By the way, how many years since Reeva Steenkamp was killed?
She was killed in 2013.
So yeah. A good 3 years.
Right.
Okay.
He's in jail. He's going to be in jail for a good few years. Why are we obsessing over this guy? And don't our prosecuting authority have other people to go after right now? I mean, he's in jail. It's not like he's going to escape anytime soon. It's not like he's having a happy time. It's not like justice hasn't been dealt. I mean, you could argue more or less years, but what are you really arguing? I'll tell you something. To go to prison for a month would be hell for most of us. Hell.
I do find it strange that Hedy Knell is obsessed with Oscar. It is quite odd.
Well, maybe it's because it's Oscar Pistorius.
This is his meal ticket. This is his way to attention. He's become an attention Barbie. He's become one of those people who just wants attention the whole time. The more times you press the attention Barbie's little button, the more she talks to you.
It's going to go down as one of the biggest trials of this country's history.
It's already done.
He wants the association that he's the guy who won. You know, who won the case and who did it right, possibly.
He didn't. I'm speculating. He blew it, which is why it had to be appealed and then sent back.
You blew it!
But that is why they're going back to court next week, Friday, is because he wants to see if he can actually, you know.
Get on with it. Listen, Harry, we got lots of shit to deal with in this country. Come on. This one guy without legs, how much more of a threat to society is he right now? Let's focus on the important stuff. There are some very bad people in South Africa who are still out there with us.
Oh, well, they're always going to be bad people among us, Gareth. You know, you're never going to be able to get rid of all of them.
I'm also just bored with Oscar.
I know.
I think they're doing this because the Olympics are on. I'm very cynical about this.
No, but that's the Paralympics are in 2 weeks. Maybe that's...
Well, then it's the Paralympics.
That's when it happens.
Potato, potato. And I'm not making a comment about vegetables. Carry on. What's on?
Okay, so in Egypt, one of their state-run television channels has suspended 8 of their female presenters.
Uh-oh.
Would anybody like to guess why these women...
Their headscarf fell off.
They're too sexy.
Oh, quite the contrary.
On the opposite.
They have become too fat, Gareth.
Oh.
And so they were suspended. And they have been told that they are going to get a month to lose the weight or else they are not going to get their jobs back. The decision was made by Safa Hegazi, who took over as chief of the public broadcaster in April on a promise to modernize the organization. Khadija Khatab is one of the women who was taken off air, and she said the decision was humiliating. But Majdi Lachine, who is a state television official.
I know Majdi Lachine, yeah.
Defended the move, saying it should sound the alarm for all presenters that they have to pay attention to their appearance, including weight.
Fat, drunk, and stupid is no way to go through life, son.
And so 8 of these women have been taken off the air and have been told you need to drop some kilograms.
Now look. Why do we do this with women? But there are so many fat
because
men.
Because we can.
It's
as simple as that. Because we can.
You were a TV presenter once.
Yes.
So you know what it's like.
Yes.
You have the same amount of work as a man.
Yes.
There are fat men all over television.
Of course there are.
Now, if we're going to talk about equal this and that, we got to start with something as obvious as this. If a fat person wants to be on TV, they must lose weight. Because we don't all want to look at that. And the reason that people like me don't just sit and eat pies all day, and I try really hard to get to gym once or twice in a week, is because I don't want other people to be disgusted by me.
Well, it's also because it's in your best interest to be as healthy as you can.
That's right, because I don't want heart disease and breathing problems, and I don't want to smell, and I don't want to move around really slowly and lumber about the building.
And have labored breath.
Yeah, well, imagine. Exactly. All right, so here's the deal. You could get upset about this, or we can say, fine. We know good-looking people are better for TV ratings. Fair enough. That's just the way it is.
Yeah, because we prefer to see good-looking people on television.
The most successful TV shows of all time have been TV shows, whether they're current affairs shows or series or reality shows, the more beautiful, good-looking people you've got on, objectively beautiful people, the better for your ratings. So television is an advertising business. We've got the Lurys this weekend. It's all about advertising. TV was invented by the ad agencies because they needed to advertise products to people. So they made up things in between the ads like soap operas and like Baywatch and like Big Brother and Idols and everything else. To have good looking now. I mean, you may look at Idols and you may think there's not one good looking person on that show. Maybe that's a good point, but I will point you out Unati.
Gorgeous.
A reason to watch. Now, if we take television and we say, fine, TV is for people who are good looking to be on, so that the rest of us, and I firmly count myself among the rest of us, can watch something that we go, she's hot, he's good looking. Those are nice looking people.
Yeah.
Since it's a visual medium, looks are important. But then, if we do that, we must also acknowledge that there is no way that you can have, who's that fat guy from Sky News? Eamon Holmes.
Is he still on Sky News?
I'm sure he's still there. I'll bet you any amount of money he's still there. Well, Eamon Holmes.
He does the morning show with his wife as well.
His wife is on it with him.
Yes, Ruth. I think it's Ruth Holmes.
Oh, okay.
I will throw him out on their ass. Just take him, just throw him out just like they did it. Just take him, just like you take a shovel, just shovel their ass right on outside.
Right.
And he'll have to make sure they hit the ass.
Right.
So they'll never do that shit again.
Right, never do that shit again.
Right.
So why are there so many men, especially on news television, who really don't look as good as they could? There are better looking men who can read a script. They don't have to be great journalists.
Mm.
I mean, a lot of the girls they put on Fox News, for example, it's the only reason I got Fox News at home, on this, what's this satellite, the StarSat? What's this company that used to be Top TV?
I don't know. I've never had them in my house.
I got them at home,
okay.
And I've got it for Fox News.
Yes, to.
Because these beautiful women like Megyn Kelly.
Right. Yeah,
gorgeous. But she's also smart. It's got to be said. I'm not a Donald Trump.
Of course not.
She's really smart. If I had to have a debate with Megyn Kelly, I would lose every time. The deal is that if we're going to be saying that women should be good looking, then we've got to say the same about men. This is an unacceptable, a travesty of justice, an unacceptable situation.
Gareth, yes, ideally we know that what you're saying is true, but the fact of the matter is that people absolutely just don't give a shit. And that is why these things carry on happening. Men can get away with it, so they do, and they will. And women can't, so they don't, and they get fired when they put on a little bit of weight. That's just the way it works.
Just by the way, do you know that the guy who ran Fox News, Roger Ailes, it turns out he was a big, creepy pervert who was hiring hot-looking women and like making them undress in front of him and all kinds of other really, really nasty stuff. So I kind of feel like I might be in a corner here about the whole Fox News thing. Because if you have a creep like that in charge, it's probably just complete sexism from beginning to end. Who knows?
Well, how do you explain Dr. Phil? I think he's the he's the epitome of ugliness on TV. Aesthetically, morally, everything. If you had a female psychologist
who looked like that,
she would not have a chance.
No, she wouldn't.
So for the sake of equality, let's get Dr. Phil off air.
The sooner Dr. Phil can get off the TV, the better.
If you're going to talk to me, you're going to have to be honest.
I'll be honest with you, Dr. Phil. You're too fat, you're too ugly, and that mustache has got to go. What else is in the news?
Okay.
Well, don't strain yourself. I mean, are you struggling?
I'm trying to.
Slow news day?
No, I'm trying to find. Gosh, where is this thing now? Hang on, give me a second. Give me a second. Oh, okay, chores, right? Chores. Things that we hate doing.
Mm.
Why is it that people are routinely inclined to engage in unpleasant activities?
Mm.
Studies. We love when studies, you know, do a bit of research. They question a whole bunch of people and then they come back and tell you, or they propose to tell you what the reason for things are. And so according to a recent study, a team of researchers at the Boston Children's Hospital in the United States.
Yes.
They developed a smartphone app to monitor in real time the activities and moods of over 28,000 people.
Uh-huh.
The participants were presented with questionnaires via the app at random times throughout the day, and they were asked to rate their current mood on a scale of 0, which is very unhappy, to 100, which is very happy, and to report back what they were doing from a standard list of choices. So this study was led by Dr. Maxime Takwe, who's a research fellow at the hospital, and he found that people were more likely to engage in mood-increasing activities such as playing a sport or going to the gym when they felt bad. So if you are registering at a zero on a happy scale, that is when you are more inclined to go out and do something like play a sport or go to the gym because you're trying to change your mood. While we engage in necessary but mood-decreasing activities such as chores and maintenance when we're feeling good.
Because we have to, otherwise our environment becomes a disaster. I thought so too. I try to be a tidy person. You're a tidy person. I know you are. Mabali's always kept a very neat sort of arrangement around her at work. She doesn't like sitting in the squalor or in the filth of... some people have dirty tissues and food and paper with smudge marks on it all around them, and their computer screen is always dirty and all that kind of thing. I know you like to be organized. Some people don't mind.
Mm.
And they won't do that stuff. And you know what? Some people will argue that they're happier because they don't worry so much about that shit that we worry about.
Okay.
What do you make?
And then other people, well, what about the people who have no problem living in squalor?
Well, you can't judge them. Maybe they're happier because they don't spend the whole time cleaning up like we do. If I added up the hours in the day that I end up doing these meaningless chores and tasks, trying to organize my life into compartments, trying to get my files sorted out, I have a file for everything. I got papers alphabetically organized. My books on my shelf. I know where everything is. And it works for me because I'm a bit obsessive compulsive. But if I added up all that time, I could have cured cancer by now if I applied myself. I've wasted a lot of time just tidying up after myself. Don't you?
True. But what I gather this study is trying to suggest is, yes, look, we all have things that we need to do, right? Like, you know that at some point you're going to have to wash the dishes,
yeah, right,
or clean up after yourself. What the study is saying is that you are more likely to do these things when you are in a good mood to begin with. Because if you're in a funk, then you're more likely to say, oh, you know what? The dishes can wait for tomorrow. Or the laundry can wait for tomorrow. But if you are like up, you know, perky and in a good mood and you're feeling like, yeah, I'm about to take over the world, you're more likely to get the boring stuff out of the way quickly. That's what the study is suggesting. That's what I'm gathering from this.
What do you say, Homo?
Well, I think it makes sense because I
hate... By the way, if you're wondering what Romain was doing here, he was meant to stand in for the sport, but we decided to keep him around a little bit longer. Yeah.
I sort of understand that. I hate DIY, putting nails in walls and vacuuming, and it's awful.
Your wife doesn't do that stuff though, does she? So you have to.
She actually loves doing it.
Really?
But I must help her all the time. I said, yeah. What happened to emancipation? Female emancipation. All right, there you go.
But anyway. It must be hell to live with you.
But anyways, but every 6 months or so, we have, I do get like a spurt of overwhelming euphoria.
Uh-huh.
And that's when I do the most productive DIY work, when that happens.
Yeah, when you're in that moment, that mood.
Because if I'm in a bad mood, I will not do that because it'll make me even in a worse mood.
So it doesn't make sense to me. I love doing that stuff. And you know what? After you've done it all and you walk into a room and it works and everything's sorted out and the light switch is working properly and the floor looks good and the ceiling looks good and the walls and everything is just right and the furniture in there it fits. Oh, it makes me happy.
Yes, but that's your OCD kicking in.
No, big time.
You see, the rest of us don't have OCD, so we don't have this need or this inclination to want everything to be organized and proper all the time.
Oh.
For us, we're happy to leave a cup on that coffee table overnight, and then tomorrow morning when you wake up and you're leaving, you're like, oh, by the way, that cup is still there. Then only you'll remove it and put it in the sink.
Someone else's problem, the cup has
to go in the sink immediately.
Oh, big time. Is there something, am I mentally ill?
No, you've just got OCD.
I might just be mentally ill. All right, here are a couple of messages. Jared says, the best television is when beautiful people do disgusting things.
Fear Factor.
There's a show, got a show on in America where these it's a reality show. They got cameras on a yacht, on like a luxury yacht, and it's called Below Decks. And they actually deal with, there's a crew of about 12, 15 people on some of these luxury yachts. All good looking people, young, they're all in the prime of their lives, they're all in great shape, they all work on the ship. They do everything from swab the decks to wash the dishes to entertain the rich people who own the yachts or whatever it is. So it's an interesting job. But these people all are in close quarters because they all sleep in bunk beds downstairs. But they're around each other the whole time and they can't get off this boat. And it's the most fascinating show because you've got great-looking people who are all around each other 24/7. And you get to see some interesting stuff. But because they're beautiful people, you'll stick around for longer. Mm. You'll stick through the boring bits because there's something to look at to get back to the point. Mm. So I think maybe Jared's got a point here. If we make beautiful people do disgusting things on TV, we're all thrilled because then we not only get to watch the beautiful people, but we also get to feel superior to them because they're doing disgusting things.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Where we would normally feel inferior to them.
Because we're uglier than them.
Because we are ugly.
Yeah,
okay.
Yes, we are ugly.
Well, we
thanks
are.
For, thank
well,
you for going
look.
There. All right. Someone, Richard says, how the hell does Derek Watts stay on TV if beautiful people are meant to be good for ratings? Good point. I mean, Derek would say the same. Yesterday we had Miss South Africa in here, and I know for a fact that I perk up. You've heard me whenever we have a really beautiful woman in the studio.
Yes.
Yeah, my whole tone of voice changes.
But that's what I said yesterday.
I mean, that's why you're here. But
no, not
some
really.
Days it doesn't work because I see you all the time.
No, that's not why I'm here.
We're like we're on the yacht. I'm tired of you.
But that's why I said yesterday that when you see an attractive man or a beautiful woman, your mood immediately changes.
Oh, sure.
They,
if
they
you go
just
to an appointment,
effect on you.
Let's say you got a horrible meeting scheduled in your day, and you pitch up for this meeting, and it's someone really hot. Does that meeting not become better?
It becomes less less of a pain.
Right.
Than when you went in there for sure.
Damn right. Okay, Pantagraph says on Twitter, I'm listening to you. Gareth, don't you want to come to my house and organize it? I am a lazy shit. Well, okay. I don't enjoy organizing other people's stuff. Don't get me wrong. I don't mind helping friends of mine or family, but it doesn't give me as much pleasure as sorting out my own trouble. And apparently, Chris Chameleon is on his way, so we'll check in with him. It's also Organ Donor Month, so we're going to speak to those people in a short while. And then John T. Searle on the Sex Talk Show.
Well, it is a Friday.
Today, Male Sexuality, Insight and Understanding with Caroline Carrington. It's all happening on Sex Talk. And while we're talking about the lineup, let me give you a quick peek at what's going on. Today, are you ready?
Give it to us.
Oh. So Gas Comedy Podcast, Dave Levinson and Eric Janssen, they're both coming in today to do some live commentary, comedy, and currency. Yeah, they're talking about a direction that was never intended for the show. What started out as a normal comedy interview with Mo Motsebe is abruptly diverted by the deep and brooding muses of Tats and Nkonzo. Then the guys get really heavy on comedy influences, and then the podcast suddenly ends, all too soon. So expect part two next week. It's exciting, right? It's broken up into two pieces. So if you listen to this one, we've hooked you for the second one. Then it's Sex Talk, which I've already discussed with you, but male sexuality. Where does the power lie? We'll find out all about that between 10 and 11. 11 o'clock, the Casper Radio Show with Casper De Vries and the team. Casper and the gang bring you all the usual Friday fun and craziness. There's Kwanzaa Story, Stuff Puppies, and Newsing Muse out there in the Thought of the Week. The team is also joined by the cast of the feel-good musical I Love You, You're Perfect, Now Change. And then O'Neill on Cliff Central today, the OCC. An exciting show lined up. An hour special with his DJ set. Second hour is rapper KO opening up the show, followed by singer Lisa. And finally, Jay Summing from Mikasa will stop by to talk about his new track with Hugh Masekela. And Back to the Beach singer Shekinah makes her OOC debut. Hey, that's a hell
nice.
Of a lineup,
yeah,
huh?
It usually
that
is.
Song of Shekinah's is awesome. I think I'm going to play it. Do you mind if I play it?
As long as Flex doesn't make any...
Flex.
Well, he's not here. So.
He's not here, so you don't have to panic about Flex. Don't be mean about him. He's on his way to Israel. I mean, Italy.
The Jewish camp.
Yes.
Yeah. But camp. Please, I really don't like that word. I just want to find the song, and then we'll get into Organ Donor Month, which sounds horrible, but actually could be quite interesting. Because, you know, the minute I think of organ donor, I think, well, what if I need that? But usually they've taken it by the time you don't need it anymore.
People who donate organs don't believe in reincarnation.
Are you an organ donor?
No.
No?
Haven't you heard Chris Rock? talk about it. It's like, you don't believe in reincarnation, so you come back in 60 years and then you got no eyes. some six-year-old in Mississippi has your eyes. You're like,
all right, funny. Very nice. Okay, so there we go. A little bit of look at Romain stepping up to the comedy box. There's a lot of pressure to keep up with the Gas Comedy Podcast today as well. All right, it's 13 minutes to 8, cliffcentral.com, Friday morning. Lots of stuff still to come. And here's Shekinah with Sketchy Bongo and Let You Know, which is beautiful. You ready for it? Just for Friday. Beautiful voice of Shekinah. She'll be on O'Neill today.
CliffCentral.com.